Hello and welcome to the Grazier's Grapevine, where we hold lively discussions on all things grazing. I'm your host, Jen Albright. This podcast is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Grazing Lands Coalition, as well as the National Wildlife Federation and its funders. Hey friends, so we are continuing our cover crop grazing series today, and we are going to be speaking with Dwight Lingenfelter, and he is with Penn State Extension. Cheryl Burns was kind enough to guest host this interview for me, and it's an interesting one, and it's about weed management. And I know I jokingly sometimes call weeds alternative forage, but I know me personally, my nemesis is or has been milkweed in our fields. And so it's kind of hard because I love watching the monarchs, but at the same time, my cows don't graze it. So I hope you'll enjoy this podcast and you'll find some of the information as valuable as I have. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. This is Cheryl Burns, the guest host for today's Grazier's Grapevine podcast. And as part of our ongoing cover crop grazing project, we recognize that both farmers and grazers have weed management issues. So we wanted to bring someone in to talk about weed management generally and as it applies in pasture management. And today we're solely focusing on more traditional grazing, and maybe in the future we'll be able to talk about how weed management issues are covered in somebody that's using cover crops. So I'm pleased that we're able to have Dwight Lingenfelter. He's a Penn State Extension Associate specializing in weed science. Dwight, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Now, if you don't mind, could you tell us a little bit about your background and the work you do with Penn State?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So, I've been at Penn State now for about 25 years. I'm considered an extension weed scientist. I primarily deal with weed management tactics and primary agronomic crops, which would obviously include forage-based systems. I also do a little bit of weed management in vegetable systems as well.
That's great. So as I mentioned in the introduction, everybody, all farmers and grazers, have to deal with weed management issues from time to time. So what are some of the most important things that they can think about when they're preparing to take action in their fields or pastures?
Yeah, sure. So really, when it comes to forage system, pasture system, effective weed control begins with not only the establishing, but also maintaining healthy pastures and hay fields. And that really is kind of the foundation of this type of a system. Since it's most cases a perennial-based system, you need to think about integrated weed management tactics. And if we think about, various management tactics, I think that most of it boils down to I'll kind of just work down through a list that I typically speak about here is cultural, mechanical, and chemical. And when we think about cultural, those are some aspects related to selecting competitive species or mixes, whether it be a single grass or a legume mix. Other agronomic issues are maintaining optimum soil fertility and pH. Those are very critical, especially at the onset, but through the life of the pasture. And then also haying management, things like harvest time, proper time, not too frequently. And then obviously in the case like this, we're grazing, and in a lot of these systems too, just grazing management aspects, whether it's continuous versus rotational. And, one of the biggest aspects that we deal with or encounter, especially in these grazed systems, is overgrazing. And once an area is overgrazed, the weeds generally take over pretty rapidly, and it can sometimes be hard then to reestablish or get the pasture back the way it was. And I think that also goes for whether you're talking about a true forage area, or whether it's kind of an exercise lodge or so forth. And then other aspects are things like, just fence rows, making sure you keep those areas clean and weed free, maybe take a spot sprayer or something to clean the fence rows so they don't get unruly and can introduce seeds that way. And then also other aspects of, you know, managing insects and diseases and so forth. And then if we move to other aspects like mechanical, you know, make sure, you know, to mow the pasture routinely and at the proper time. You know, just thinking about, you know, the life cycle of the weeds and make sure you clip the pasture before seeds start to set on the weeds. And then also it could be necessary that if certain areas, you know, have an introduced species, then you may need to think about, you know, hand roguing those areas where necessary. And those tactics right there, the cultural and mechanical, those hold true for either a conventional system or an organic system. And then where they do differentiate is then, you know, the chemical end of things, you know, the use of herbicides, you know, where appropriate to control weeds. Obviously, that would be in a more conventional system. And then so the combination of those tactics, you know, the proper timing of each of those can really, really make for, you know, a good, well-balanced weed management approach in your system.
Right. Well, you know, the timing issue with weeds, I know, is important just because sometimes clipping can be an easy way to manage it instead of having to, you know, break out an herbicide. But that is really dependent on what kind of weeds there are. Are there any, like, you know, major weeds that people often see in pasture that they should be on the lookout for? Or what should grazers be looking for when they're in the pasture as far as identifying weeds?
Sure. Yeah, good question. Yeah. So really, you know, we typically deal with the different life stages of weeds. So just kind of go down through those quickly. So annual weeds, you know, are typically broken down either into summer annuals or winter annuals. And in most cases, you know, the summer annual species, again, those are the ones that have a year life cycle. You know, we can typically manage those, you know, pretty easily as long as we control them or clip them before they set seed. So really, when you're trying to control an annual weed, it's all about seed production. So you want to stop seed production. And as I mentioned, that can either be done through mechanical means by mowing or it could even be used, you know, appropriate herbicide as well. And then we move on to then biennials. You know, those are the ones that are a 2-year life cycle. You know, there are a few species that we have, biennial, some of the thistles, things like bull thistle, plumeless thistle, things like a wild carrot, or some people know as Queen Anne's lace. You know, those are a 2-year species. And again, those are also, so in order for them to reproduce, it's by seed. So anything that you can do in order to stop seed production, whether by you know, mowing or you know, effective herbicides, is necessary. And then, of course, the last one we have is our perennial weeds. You know, and these are the ones that can sometimes take over areas, you know, because of their aggressive life cycles. You know, with the perennial, it's more about, you know, controlling the root structures and the root systems. You know, they some of them do have some pretty viable seeds, but it's really the root systems that are most important to control. And with that, we typically recommend, you know, a combination of mowing primarily in the spring and summer to try to set the root reserves back a little bit, but then applying an effective herbicide in the fall when all the sugars are heading back down into the root system for the plant as it's going dormant. So if you apply herbicide appropriately in the late summer or fall, then herbicide gets attached to those sugars and taken down to the root system for a more effective kill. Okay, so that there's some different things you need to consider when it comes to you know, the life cycles and what's the best time to apply a certain tactic. And you know, I get a lot of questions about, you know where do we find some information regarding how to identify weeds, and there the quite honestly the my go-to reference is Weeds of the Northeast. It's a book that's been out now probably going on about 30 years. It's actually published by Cornell Press. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's about a $25 book. It's actually in the process of being updated here within the next year or two, but again, it's still a really good reference. Another one, believe it or not, that I use quite often is actually a wildflower guide. You know, I have a lot of specimens come into my office, or people send pictures to me, and they're kind of not a typical weed, but a lot of times they're some kind of a other species that may not be, you know, typical of systems. So I use a guide like Newcomb's Wildflower Guide or Peterson's Wildflower Guide, can be other ones that actually are more hard copy. And then there are actually numerous online resources that a lot of universities have some really good websites that have some good weed ID, sources and so forth that can be used. Another thing that we need to be cautious of, especially in pasture systems, are poisonous plants. You know, it's another thing, you know, just one thing to have a weed, but if the weed happens to have toxic properties, then you really need to have an understanding of those too. And along those lines, yes, there are numerous books and fact sheets and references on toxic plants. My concern with a lot of those are some of them are rather vague, or I've even encountered some references that have actual outright incorrect information. And then in a lot of ways, sometimes these references can be somewhat alarmist. So you need to be very cautious about where you get your information from. So I always recommend, you know, trusting university-based or science-based products, and not just you know, finding a lot of the stuff that's anecdotal or people who maybe say things that really aren't correct. There's another some websites that you may want to look if you have poisonous plant issues. Unfortunately, University of Pennsylvania their vet school used to have a really good website, but in the last couple of years I have not been able to find that site. So I'm assuming either they moved it or they discontinued it. But actually another one that I found that has to be a really good site is actually Colorado State University. Their vet school has a pretty good website that has a lot of toxic aspects of some of the poisonous plants, which is a pretty good resource as well. And then other resources like the Weed Science Society of America also has some sources that you could cite as well.
No, that's good. And I know there are some apps. When I've been in this field with past projects, I often will take photos. If I can't tell what it is when I'm out in the field, I know we've used weeds in the Northeast in the past. And if it's not in there, or if there's a part of it that doesn't quite look right, taking a picture, you know, from the top down so you get the full, the full image, and maybe one from the side or any other identifying characteristics can really help when you're back, you know, in the office or, home to find those things. And I know Penn State has some good resources as well. In fact, there's a Weed ID webinar available on the Extension site, and we'll be sure to include a link for that so that people can have access to that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, there are some different web-based resources that are available. There are numerous apps out there, and I know some of my weed science colleagues at other universities has actually tried to ground truth some of those to make sure that they were legitimate. And you know, it's like anything. You know, there are some apps that are very good and they do a good job at proper identification, and other ones, you know, kind of lead you astray. So unfortunately, I don't have those exact details about which ones are the kind of the go-to ones and which ones you need to stay away from. But yeah, I mean, there are some ones out there that just be careful when you use them. But there are also other online, you know, webinars and courses that you can take as well. In fact, as you mentioned, I even have a webinar that I've created for Penn State Extension that has some updated information on miscellaneous weeds and forages and pastures, and also some potential control tactics as well.
So one issue that might be more important for grazers than somebody growing field crops or vegetable crops is those grassy weeds. So how to manage things like crabgrass or Japanese silkgrass that might be a little more obvious in other fields than they would be in pasture. And then when you do see them, they're a problem. So what recommendations do you have for that?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, you know, that's one of the unique challenges with especially these grass-based systems. And I would say still the majority of weed species that I get asked about are broadleaf weed species in grass pastures. And those are relatively easy to control with a lot of selective herbicides and or mowing. But what you're referring to specifically are, you know, we're seeing that you're having increasing problems with grassy weeds in pastures. You know, primarily things like large crabgrass, some of the foxtail species, probably especially like yellow foxtail in particular. And then, yeah, more so in the last number of years, Japanese stiltgrass. And just one of the problems with these is they can be difficult to control because you're trying to take a grass out of a grass, and there are limited, you know, herbicide options for controlling these types of species. So thankfully, at least in like I say, more of a conventional standpoint of a pasture, for example, you know, we do have, you know, a couple different herbicide products that can be used. You know, two in particular that I typically recommend are Prowl H2O and another one called Satellite HydroCap. And these two products, they're actually the same active ingredient, which is pendimethalin, and they are labeled for use in cool season forage grass species, and even if there are some legumes, particularly alfalfa, that they can be used in as well. You need to apply them when it's a established stand, and also the rates can range anywhere between 1 quart and about 4 quarts per acre. And there's a pretty good utility of when they can be applied, you know, whether it be the fall or spring or even between cuttings. But one thing you need to be aware of with these are considered pre-emergent herbicides. So what that means is they need to be applied or on the ground before the seeds, in this case, you know, whether crabgrass or stiltgrass, starts to germinate. But anyway, what I typically recommend is actually a split application of the you know, either of these products. The first application would occur, you know, in right now in the spring or maybe a week or two earlier, and then a second application can be made after the first or the second cutting, depending on what weed you're trying to go after. And we found through some research, through other universities and so forth, have found that really the split application does a much better job of controlling species like foxtail, because the herbicide is there throughout that germination period, through the time in the fall when they start to set seed. So anyway, that's just one example of how we can go after some of these grassy species in a grass pasture. Unfortunately, there's not really any post-emergence products yet that are labeled for use in pastures for grass control. We hope that we'll be able to get a few products that are labeled in the turf setting, or turf and lawn care setting that could be maybe used in pasture. But again, those haven't gone through the regulatory process yet to be applied in a pasture setting. So for now, if you have problems with crabgrass and stiltgrass, foxtail, really about the only thing we can recommend at this point would be Prowl H2O or Satellite HydroCap.
Okay. Well, and you had mentioned before you provided some of that information about the broadleaf weeds, knowing that there's, you know, different herbicides for different issues, such as there is with this. There's also different application methods that are required.
So yeah, as far as application of herbicides, you know, whether it be with these what we call pre-emergent applications or a post-emergent application, in a setting like this, they'd be applied very, very similarly. And really, when it comes to application of herbicides in a pasture setting, there's probably four major, you know, types of sprayers or applicators, and the most common one would be a boom sprayer. You know, that's where you actually have a boom that may be 15 or 20 feet or 60 or 100 feet wide, you know, depending on the size of the sprayer, with nozzles that are fixed along that boom. And then those apply a broadcast of the product. And that's pretty typical, whether you're spraying in a pasture setting or in a you know, more of a field crop application. There's actually another type of a sprayer that I actually recommends primarily for these pasture settings, is what's called a boomless sprayer. And basically what that is it's you know, unlike the boom sprayer, it's a very, very small T-bar, if you will, on the back side of the sprayer. And it actually, there's three different nozzles. The setups that I've seen have either two or in most cases three nozzles. One nozzle shoots out to the right side, one to the left side, and then the other one kind of covers what's there in the middle. And these, and depending on the type of nozzle that you select and you use on the system, it can shoot anywhere between, you know, 30 and maybe 60 feet of coverage that can be applied. And then these are really great systems, especially for pastures, because of the you know, the hilly nature of pastures in most cases, or, you know, the fence lines where you don't have to worry about a boom smacking up against the side of a fence or maybe potentially breaking it. Some of these fields that aren't quite square, a little bit easier to get around with a boomless sprayer, or if there's happens to be like an electric pole or something in there, again, just any other type of obstacle that may potentially the boom could interfere with, these boomless sprayers really, really, really shine. Now, having said that, really these types of sprayers are really best for systemic type herbicides. And what I mean by that are products like 2,4-D and dicamba, crossbow, triclopyr, products like that, where you don't have to have really complete and full coverage, the spray coverage of the leaf surface. You know, as long as you get a few spray droplets on the leaf surface, these products are systemic and they'll be taken into the plant and usually do a pretty good job. And you could even use some of these types of sprayers too if you have these pre-emergence herbicides like Prowl or Satellite to be used early in the spring. But the problem is the calibration of these isn't as exact as a boom sprayer. So just kind of keep that in mind. Another type of sprayer would be, you know, just more of a smaller, like an ATV type, where you have maybe a small 15 or 20 gallon tank on the front or the back of the ATV, and you have maybe a small boom. Or you can even have a wand attached to that, where you can actually do some spot spraying. So you can run around the pasture with your ATV and just do some spot spraying with that. And then the last type that I recommend, especially for these pasture settings, are what we call these rope wick or wiper applicators. And these are the ones that actually that you use a solution of generally a 1-to-1 ratio of the herbicide to water, or even, you know, 2/3 herbicide to 1 part water, and then you it's attached to the small wiper or wick that gets saturated with the solution, and then you basically just wipe that right over with an ATV or a pull behind applicator on a tractor, and then you just wipe the solution right across that weed. So basically what you're doing is you're using the height differential of the weed compared to the pasture. So the idea is that the pasture species will be at a certain level lower, and then the weed will be above that. And you set the wiper so it just wipes only the weed and not the desirable forage. So those are some different considerations for applying herbicides to a pasture setting.
That's really neat. That wiper setup sounds like it could really be beneficial for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, it works well, especially then if you don't. A lot of times we do recommend wiping it in at least two different directions, so you make sure you get your good coverage of the weed with the herbicide.
That's great. Well, one thing I keep thinking of is, you know, sometimes newer grazers, depending on what their background is, they may be a little hesitant about selecting or using a product. Somebody with a little more experience or broader, you know, agricultural experience might, you know right away what they need to use or know to where to go to find that information. Do you have any recommendations for newer grazers that are having to deal with this, either resources they can turn to, or at what point should they be talking to somebody at Extension or to an advisor of some sort?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, whether you're just beginning, or even if you have experience, you know, there's always some resources out there. You know, the two that come to my mind that you know I'm kind of partial to, is because I help to author them, are the Agronomy Guide and also the Mid-Atlantic Field Crop Weed Management Guide. And these are two guides that we put together. There's different commodities in each of these guides, and then also in association with that, we have different herbicide recommendations or comments on the different products that are available. And basically what we do is we look at the various herbicides that are labeled for these different situations, and we try to kind of pull apart the label, if you will, and pick out the most helpful information from these guides and put them into either a table format or into kind of a short text, bulleted text that's easy to reference. Because sometimes reading the herbicide label, or any pesticide label for that matter of fact, can be kind of challenging and kind of daunting. And so that's why I recommend, you know, going to at least starting with a guide like this, you know, to get information, because we have a lot of tables in there that have a listing of the various weeds down the one side, and then maybe the herbicides on the top. And then you basically, you know, find the weed you're looking for, and you trace across and you see what the rating is. So we also give evaluations of our experience with the different products on the different weeds, and provide an actual control rating that you can expect if you use a herbicide like that. And then not only that, we also have, you know, especially for the pasture or grazing setups, for example, you know, there's a lot of issues with harvesting and grazing intervals between application, and this guide also has tables in there that will talk about, you know, if you spray a certain herbicide, how many days do you need to wait before you can have animals go back in there. And also, it's a lot of times we break that table down into, you know, the type of animal, you know, whether it's a lactating dairy, for example, or other type of livestock. All that information we pull right from the label and we put it in this table, so it's relatively easy to find. And then in addition to that, we also have other tables or charts in there. You know, there's, as I mentioned before, depending on the type of weed you have, you know, understanding the best time to control it, and we have another chart in there that is basically the optimum time of year for foliar application of certain herbicides on selected weeds. So basically what we'll do is we'll have a bunch of weeds listed on one side, and then for example, calendar months of the calendar on top, and then we'll kind of tell you, you know, if you have this weed species, you know, this time of the year is the best. You know, maybe early spring application, or maybe late summer, fall would be the best. So we have a table like that that can really help to provide some insight on what are some timing options for the type of species you have. And then as I mentioned too, you know with what I we talked a lot about, I mentioned a lot of broadleaf herbicides are used quite a bit for weeds in these pasture settings, and quite honestly, we have all those ratings in the guide, but I'd say probably 75-80% of the time when I have to help people, you know, select a herbicide, in most cases I recommend a combination of 2,4-D and dicamba. You know, a lot of times I'll recommend a quart of 2,4-D and a pint of dicamba, you know, whether it's Clarity or Banvel. And that gets the majority of broadleaf weed species that you encounter in a grass pasture. There may be some situations where you have weeds like milkweed or horse nettle or multiflora rose. Weeds like that are a little bit more challenging. So in most cases like that 2,4-D dicamba combination probably won't be your best bet. But in other cases, I would recommend something like crossbow or Cimarron, for example, for something like multiflora rose. You know, crossbow usually does a pretty good job on things like horse nettle. Milkweed is very tough to control. And there's a lot of different herbicides aren't that great on it to begin with. In most cases, you're only going to get about 70% control with any of the herbicides, you know, whether it be 2,4-D, dicamba, or crossbow. And that's about as good as it gets for something like milkweed.
Now, the agronomy guide, I know, is available at extension offices. It's also available to purchase as a download, as a PDF. The Mid-Atlantic Guide, is that also available at extension offices?
Yeah, and nowadays, you know, not with the way we have it structured now, a lot of times the agronomy guide doesn't necessarily get the office. I mean, depending on what office you go to, they may have a few copies on hand, but in most cases, you know, you'll need to go to our extension publications website, or there's actually a phone number that you can call to order them. That'd probably be your most guaranteed way of ordering either the agronomy guide or the Mid-Atlantic weed guide.
Oh, great. Well, and we'll be sure to include a link, you know, to where to find that, so that if somebody wants to go directly for that, they can do that.
Right, right.
Now, was there anything that you wanted to add, or anything you wanted to clarify?
I think we covered most of it. I mean, another question that I typically get is, you know, this issue with clovers in pastures, and a lot of you know, people, you know, they don't want to spray a herbicide because they're afraid of, they don't want to kill the clover. And again, that's a legitimate concern. But I think another thing we need to think about too is you have to kind of evaluate what kind of clover is it. Is it, you know, some kind of clover, you know, that's really there for nutritional needs, or for, you know, whether there's livestock or nutritional needs in the soil, or is it just some kind of a species that just happened to get into the mix, and it's really not something you put in there as a desirable species. So a lot of ways, you know, is it some kind of wild type that's just really not providing that much service, if you will, to the whole system. And a lot of people will you know, make sure they don't kill that versus letting a serious weed problem take over, when they really should be concerned about controlling the weed and not so much about the clover. And so, you know, there's you really need to evaluate your setting. There are some of the white clovers in particular that will tolerate 2,4-D, but dicamba they won't tolerate. So again, there are some situations where you can maybe apply up to a pint per acre of 2,4-D if it's white clover, and a lot of times you may set it back or stunt it or twist it up a little bit, but it generally recovers. But if you have dicamba in the mix, or triclopyr, crossbow, it will kill that. So I guess all I'm saying is just, you know, make sure, you know, that you don't just you know, save the clover for if it's not really providing that much of a you know, a positive benefit, and then but then you let the weeds go rampant just because, you know, that bit of clover you have in your pasture.
So there's been a lot of good points that you've brought up. Just to kind of quick recap some of those, I think it all goes back to starting with good agronomic practices. If you're taking care of your soil, if you're doing soil tests and making sure you have the right seed mixes, and you're paying attention to what's going on in your pastures, then when you do have a weed problem, you can just make sure that you're properly identifying those weeds. And then with proper weed identification, you can consult various resources like the agronomy guide for the different control options, application rates, and application intervals. Kind of practice all of those things, you know, you'll be doing well. But if you need assistance, extension is available, grazing advisors are available, and we can provide support. So Dwight, with that, is there anything else you'd like to add, either generally or maybe something for people getting started or more experienced grazers?
Yeah, I think we covered most of it. It's kind of as I mentioned to begin with, that really, you know, good weed control does start with you know, the establishment process and then maintaining those, especially with these perennial systems. You know, unlike an annual crop, you know, like corn or soybeans, you get a kind of chance to restart over each year. But in this case, with a perennial-based system, you really need to take it serious right off the bat. You know, establish in areas that are weed-free to begin with, and then maintaining those that throughout the years. And in a lot of cases, with especially perennials perennial weeds that continue to take over, is it took multiple years to have that weed take over a pasture or an area. It's going to take multiple years to get rid of it. So don't expect that you can just mow it or just spray it once and all of a sudden it magically disappears. That's not the case. So that's why and that's also holds true for annuals. When you think about annual weeds, about 80% of our annual weeds come from seed from 1 year to the next. And so stopping seed production with annuals and then stopping root development in perennials are the two things you really need to maintain and be diligent about as you're working on the agronomics of the total pasture system.
That's great. That's good advice. Well, Dwight, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to speak with us today and for sharing your knowledge. We hope that if folks have questions, that they'll either consult some of the resources that Penn State has available. We'll post links with the podcast to some of those resources and to events as they come available. I know there are different pasture walks that will also have a weed management focus. So thanks again, Dwight, and we hope we'll talk to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.